Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, would we call that a lime green V-neck with cardigan?
I think maybe it's the camera. It's more olive green, I would say.
Oh, okay. Yeah. More of a Metal Gear Solid 3 vibe, if you follow.
Yeah.
My good buddy, producer extraordinaire Cameron McCoy, how you doing, friend?
Great, man. We'll talk about it later, but I've got the arena fever.
Yeah, so you finally jumped in. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, I mean, it's kind of a news light week, but I do want to cover kind of standard, kind of what's going on with it, your experiences in arena, that kind of thing. But first of all, we start out every show with what we've been playing this week. So what have you been playing, Cameron?
I'll start out with Legacy. I played online and checked out the mono green 12 post big Eldrazi list. So like Eldrazi in general is doing quite well, like on the MTG or Goldfish metagame, whenever you look at what's happening. And I saw something kind of pop up earlier, and it's just straight up 12 post. And last year I picked up a lot of the components to 12 post and paper, and I just wanted to give this a kind of like a checkout. And so it's playing both flavors of Emrakul, Ulalaq the Ceaseless Hunger, Ugin, and then just your 12 post package with all the good things that come with that, including like crop rotation and ancient stirrings. So one of the things that I thought was like a downfall with the with 12 post, I guess with the banning of Sensei's Divining Top, it created a fallout with all these other decks that kind of relied on Sensei's Divining Top. And there wasn't really a lot of experimentation as far as like taking the 12 post list and trying some different things. This one is using crop rotation and ancient stirrings heavily in order to dig further into your deck. And I got to tell you, like, Ancient Stirrings, you see that in the Tron matchups all the time. Holy cow, digging five deep to just find that Expedition map or a Candelabra or a Pithing Needle, like, any of those things is...
All is dust, right?
All is dust. Like, I mean, it is so helpful. In fact, in some ways, I would argue, well, yeah, the instant speed of Sensei's Divining Top is great, but digging five cards deep and just being able to put something in your hand is incredibly good. So yeah, man, I absolutely had a blast playing this, and I haven't played online in Legacy in a long time, but I played against Grixis, Dredge, Death and Taxes, Blue Red Delver, and Miracles, and I ended up going 3-2, which I was really happy with. I lost against Dredge, where if I don't have my Bajuka Bog, like, it's just really hard for... I mean, they can just win out of nowhere by turn three, right? And I lost against Grixis, which was just kind of like a weird matchup. I didn't feel like I was really doing anything during those matchups. But, man, this deck, like, it just doesn't care about, like, what Miracles is doing. Like, you know, they cast a Back to Basics, I have an All's Dust. It just, like, I don't know, like, I have an inevitability of winning depending on like how my land draws work out. So, dude, Legacy, it's good. I'm glad to see that some people are starting to experiment and try new things with the bannings of Deathrite Shaman and Sensei's Divining Top, and seeing just like new ways to tweak these, maybe some of these old decks that are favorites in my mind.
Yeah, dude, I mean, we had a great time at that Legacy tournament. I haven't looked at the metagame. I felt like I was like as focused as I could be, given my workload, for like 3 weeks on Legacy. And that put me behind on Standard. And it put me... I mean, I don't feel like I can... Look, I'm playing Modern Storm right now. I don't know that I really need a lot of reps on it. But yeah, I as always, as per the usual, I'm super jealous of your ability to play Legacy on a regular basis. But whenever I don't have a tournament to go to, it really becomes difficult to focus on, you know, what's happening with the Legacy leagues and that kind of thing. I am curious, though, how was the league, like, in terms of player count?
It was low. I mean, compared to, like, Modern and everything else, it was
still
low.
Like 300 to 400?
Yeah, it was, like, 3-something at the time. I would say, like, And sometimes it did take a little while. I mean, I was playing during the day. I had a day off, and I just, you know, was playing in the middle of the day. So it was a little hard to find tournaments to fire off as quickly as they do with other formats. So
what you probably did is you started traveling somewhere in Red Dead Redemption 2, set a legacy match, played your legacy match, and then when you went back to Red Dead, you were actually at that
finally
location.
Like to the point of nice, it's a great way to manage my time, right? Yeah.
Really? So like if you have Magic Online, Legacy League, and Red Dead Redemption 2, you can just stagger them in such a way where you can double queue. Cameron.
Yeah.
Hashtag
you can also
life
make
hack.
Pasta while doing that too, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Check your Twitter.
Yeah.
You know? Multitasking is...
So here's the thing. You make a really good point, though, about it's hard to focus in on something like Legacy. And especially right now, dude, and I'm sure you're going to be talking about it too, Standard is, like, incredibly good. I ended up playing Green-White Tokens as well this week. And this is the one that's playing, like, Jade Light Ranger, Llanowar Elves, and just a whole bunch of other really, really good stuff. I didn't play too well, but, man, the metagame is fabulous. Like, yes, there is, like, green-black midrange and Jeskai control, and they do seem to be, like, I think some of the better decks. But, man, like, there's, like, white weenie. There is, like, red-white weenie. There is, like, tokens. There's so much out there. And I did not have a duplicate match the entire time, which I love. Like, normally with Standard, it's like, well, playing another Jace deck, here we go, right? And it's just, I'm done with it. But, like, right now, great meta game. So I ended up going 2-3, and I don't know if there's really anything interesting to say about this green-white tokens deck. It's fast, it's good, and one Wrath Effect and you're dead. So, I mean, that's, like, how it works.
So this is the March of the Multitudes deck,
yes,
right?
Yes, not just the March of the Multitudes version.
Yeah, so, like, what's awesome... So, I think Standard's back, and I think this has been one of the best Standards in a long time right now, right? And by right now, I mean the last 2 or 3 weeks that I've really been focused on it. Not only are there, I'd say, 6 decks that can take down a tournament in one given moment, which is fantastic for Standard, but also there's not a clearly defined way in which you should build those 6 decks. I was looking, you know, I sat down and looked at what Jeskai Control was looking like because that's where I've been depositing my wild cards, so I'm kind of stuck there. And now they're playing Settle the Wreckage. Now some of them are main decking 4 Seal Aways. Like, there's all these different ways to tune these decks. I've seen green-white lists that don't play Llanowar Elves. You know, to me, in my mind, there's no way that that can be right, but they're making it work. I mean, they're getting results. And there's, like, fringe decks that can actually be pretty interesting, too. Like, these Dragon Sarkhan decks, you know? There's just so much room to brew. And whenever I was at the shop a couple weeks ago, we were talking about, like, is it always true that when there is a gold set in Standard, it's better than when there is not a gold set in Standard? Because those powerful effects, whether it's Assassin's Trophy or Teferi or whatever... These gold cards drive your deck in such a direction that it creates balance. Because I can't play 5 color good stuff. And I'm not incentivized based upon the mana to go, okay, well, I'm mono black with Mutavaults. It really forces a ton of innovation. So what I'm saying is I think every other set should be gold centric. And we should never, ever, ever, ever do an artifact set again.
You're
unless
right.
They are colored artifacts.
Yeah. Or it's Phyrexian artifacts.
What if we did... Yeah, let's just YOLO this bad boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Phyrexian colorless cards with Storm, right? Let's just go.
Cascade as well. Let's put that on there. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're Eldrazi.
Yes. We solved it.
Just give us all the mistakes, man. Let's do it. Anyway, so I've been playing Jeskai Control. I just whipped it up this morning because, like I said, I've had kind of an intense work week. And kind of slowly cobbling together. It is frustrating, and I know we're going to get into the arena stuff like later on. But when there's like a big shift in how a deck is built. For example, these decks, Jeskai, playing more Settle the Wreckage than they were before, and you have no wild cards. And it's just like, I still am trying to grind my way through this mana base. I don't want to dump another $100 in, you know? And so it's kind of, I mean, I know I'm beating a dead horse, and I do feel like I can get there, but it's just like, wow, just keeping up with Standard, you just, it really feels like you should just buy all the Standard cards in a go, which is going to cost however many hundreds of dollars. But yeah, anyway, so Standard, good. Now, let's get out of this segment, Cameron, come back and talk about your opening experiences with Arena. All right, Cameron, just really quick on the mystery box. Roughly, if we start out, what, $224, sealed a bunch of reserve list cards away in a really highly secured box, super secure, and we've charted its growth. We've been on a downward trend the last few weeks, but this week, the worm has turned, buddy. We're up 0.1%.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Right. Like a phoenix rising from the ashes. The mystery box is back. It's like the 15 Royals, okay? Now we're on the right path.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're at, the dollar amount is $280.16. Cameron, let's not bury the lead. You didn't buy a Windows machine.
No.
Which was, you know, your stance before was, I'm going to play Arena when it comes on Mac.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, something broke in you. So what happened?
Well, I don't know. Everybody's talking about Arena, right? I mean, and I'm like, you know what? I should just hop on this bandwagon now and check it out.
Who's been driving that bandwagon, by the way, Cameron?
I think his name's Curtis, right? Yeah.
You know, I don't get to be right about a lot on this show.
Yeah.
Almost nothing.
Yeah.
So, we're really gonna hit the Arena thing hard. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
So let's just. It's Arena, man. It's Magic the Gathering, and you can download a client and play Magic the Gathering for free. This is something that I've wanted with MTGO. And yes, you can do stuff with MTGO where technically you can kind of play it for free. But I mean, like, this is like full-on free. You're playing with other people, and it's great. I cannot believe how fast the matches just fire off. I can't believe how much Wizards or Arena is actually giving you to play. Like, I mean, every day, like, it's I can open a new pack of cards. I'm getting, you know, more gold, which I can open with other packs. I can, you know, invest. The economy and everything is just so refreshing. It is so much like Hearthstone. It's scary. Like, it's clear, like, that's the template by which they base this off of. But it's really nice. I am so happy, and I've been now pushing this on, like, people who at work who have even just like a slight inkling of interest in Magic. I'm like, here, check out Arena. It's going to guide you through everything, and you should absolutely just check it out. If you're even interested in Magic, this is a gateway drug, and that in itself is so incredibly powerful, both for, like, the investors of Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, but also just for, like, for the longevity of this game and to continue to celebrate something that we love, right? So, yeah, overall, very, very, very positive experience and reviews so far with Arena. But I do have some complaints, but yeah.
No, I want to hear those too. Go ahead.
Okay, so first and foremost, I am running this on a 2016 MacBook Pro, which is running the Windows thing. I can, like, render, like, very intensive, like, After Effects 2.5D elements and everything, and my machine just sings and is just really, really smooth. Opening Arena, the fans kick on and run at, like, aircraft carrier speeds, and I don't understand, like, there's not a lot going on in the on the back end of this game. It shouldn't be pushing it that hard. So, like, I feel like obviously there's just some tuning that they need to do on the back end to make this game run a little bit more smoothly on, like, a machine that's running Windows, I guess.
Okay, so this is like, I mean, is on, in terms of your fan, is this like on a scale of zero to Spider-Man on PS4? Is this like
it's up
like
there?
Full
yeah.
go? Okay. Yeah.
So that's like a really annoying thing where I'm like, I know when this comes, this is going to be on the iPad. Like, you know it's going to be. And it's like, this should just be running a little bit more. It shouldn't be taxing my system is all I'm saying.
Yeah, agreed.
So something that I don't necessarily care for with this as far as somebody who is a, I wouldn't call myself a spike, but an aspiring spike, somebody who wants to take all the data and gameplay and analysis that we do or I do on a weekly basis with Magic the Gathering, you know, sit on it, stew on it, churn it, and then like look at ways I can improve as a Magic player. Mm-hmm. I feel like because this game just is at a breakneck speed as far as like how quickly you can get through a game of Magic, I mean, it, like you don't have any time to really think about like your turns or like a game or anything like that. That I feel like, well, yes, I get to play a lot of Magic. I don't know if it's necessarily making me the better Magic player that I aspire to be, the way that like MTGO, which is paper, does that for me, where I just have like a little bit more time to digest how I've played a game, where instead it's just like, oh, on to the next one, go, right? So I would say that's like my, it's not a complaint, but I would say it's just something I need to adapt to where, or I hope the game kind of develops because I want the, you know, a second match. I want to be able to like analyze these games and maybe just take it at a slightly slower pace. But I don't know if I'll ever get that with Arena.
Oh, well, there are best of three matches though. You just have to click on competitive construction.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, dude, I would say, look, we've made jokes about this in the past, but it is extremely true. Like, I play very, very fast in paper. And so like, and again, sometimes in a detrimental sense, I'm not saying like I'm some kind of savant that's making, but mm-hmm. I will get myself in a rush. And so Arena fits my style in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself getting really impatient on MTGO now.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Yeah.
And so, but you know, that's me. I'm two Red Bulls in each hand, you know, I'm actually wearing rollerblades while I'm playing. I just can't. No, the point being is I understand the difference in pace. I prefer that. But again, I think that's more of a difference in our personal styles than a quality or negative of the client. I am interested to see, have you only been drafting or did you build a constructed deck? Or have you just been playing the pre-made?
Right now, all I'm doing, I haven't invested a dime in this game either. And I've been playing it every night of the week, which is really, really awesome. And this is kind of another, like, I think, experiment I'm going to try to do. How long can I play this just grinding out with the free decks, getting my gold, earning that to buy more packs, and to eventually then be able to build a standard deck? But I just feel like I don't want to invest any money or anything into this because I can play so much, and I'd rather take that money and invest it still, sadly, in, you know, what I do with MTGO on a weekly basis.
Yeah, so for me, I've thrown a certain amount of money into it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you get hit that frustration level of like, okay, Jeskai Control uses a ton of rare wild cards.
Yeah.
Like 20 some odd. And it's like, okay, that would be like $200 or $300 that I would have to spend. So, and you know, if you're unlucky whenever you open the packs, then that can affect things as well. So like I have a lot of green white tokens because I've opened a ton of those cards.
Hmm.
And I feel like you're also kind of incentivized to open only the same set over and over again, because that'll help boost your, because once you have four of something, the fifth one goes towards getting more wild cards, right? No, but I'm glad you're enjoying it, man. I'm going to be interested to see how this play kind of levels out for you over the course of the next month.
Mm-hmm.
But dude, once that gets on an iPad,
that's where it's at, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Curtis might be buying a new iPad. That's what we're saying. Because I just have a mini, like a mini 2 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's my comic book reading device, you know? And if I need to go a little bit bigger to play Magic, that is completely worth it to me. Anyway, so Cameron, I do want to talk about just very quickly this isn't a thing that's much worth talking about, but there is this replacement of the MTG like weekend, like, so they're going to do Magic weekends And then they're going to do themed weekends with certain promos, but those are going to replace store championships. I think the problem that they have, from my estimation, like, this is a good program. If you look at these promos, they look gorgeous. Look at those lands. They're like lands, and they're fantastic. They're doing some cool stuff. The thing that's difficult is how many times we've changed course with whatever the store program is over the past 3 years. And when you're an old guy like me that can go to the shop once or twice a month, it is very confusing where we're at, right? I think at some point we just have to be consistent and stick with that, right? And if you want to add or alter it, maybe don't rebrand it anymore, because now I'm very lost of when I should show up to play Standard on a Saturday.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But more importantly, Cameron, because I know you don't care about any of this, you just play your like legacy tournaments every weekend or whatever. I'm interested in these promos that, okay, so these promos have been showing up. They're like full art promos, and they've been showing up for people that had issues with the Hasbro toy store, right?
Okay.
But clearly, or I think clearly, they were developed for some other product that we don't know about yet. And what do you think of these cards, Cameron? Because they've been showing up on Twitter. People have been taking photos of them and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, just the alternate art of the some of these cards are like really cool. Like, I love the look of the Bitter Blossom or Tassiger. Like, they're just like so different and striking and like what they are. So that's really, really cool. And I mean, like, you know, you look at like all of these cards, and not, I wouldn't say all of them, but there's certain ones that are like absolutely, they need to be reprinted for both modern and legacy play. And it's great to see that. I mean, Tarmogoyf is getting yet another reprint, right? Surprise, surprise. But things like Noble Hierarch or Caracas, Caverner Souls, you know, like these things that are fulminary. I mean, I could go on and on and on where they're like, they're very expensive. They absolutely should be reprinted. And it's cool that we're seeing them in some sort of promo thing and getting more into the wild. But I don't know much more beyond that, right?
Yeah, it's all kind of a mystery. But first of all, I just want to mention, even the ones that don't have new art, like the Noble Hierarch, it would be unthinkable to me that I would like one more than I would like the Judge promo. But man, when you just strip away the borders and really make the art front and center, man, I want that Noble Hierarch so bad.
Yeah.
I took one look at, like, someone mentioned it on Twitter before I clicked on the picture, and there's like, there's no way I need new Noble Hierarchs. And then I clicked on that, and, you know, Just a Dream by early 2000s rap legend Nelly was playing in my head. Like, I was just so gobsmacked by this Noble Hierarch, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's my card, man. You know that's my card.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, dude, these are gorgeous.
They're great, yeah.
This should be dual lands, right?
Yeah.
Cameron, I know it's not real. Let's pretend we're on Earth 2, okay? And there's no reserve list or whatever. Just think for a minute. A volcanic island with this.
Oh, my gosh,
an underground sea with this. What could they charge? What could they do? What would that do for Legacy? Like, please spare me the tweets. I know it's not going to happen. I know it can't happen. But when you look at these, my heart aches for what a huge missed opportunity. Like, oh my gosh. And could be something special. And I'm a big fan of reprinting promo pieces of cards that already exist. I don't like the Nexus of Fate variety where the card is, that's the only way to get the card. I like this where it can be for collectors or cube people or and God knows what these are going to cost. But man, when you look at the Demonic Tutor, and that's from the same era, it just happens to not be on the reserve list. And the way that they've reimagined that art, and it's like, man, this could be Lion's Eye Diamond that I'm looking at right now. And it's a heartbreaker, man. I'm sorry to bring down the mood, Cameron, but I just don't know how you can look at these reimaginings of these old cards and say, God, why can't this be? You know?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely agree.
Anyway, we'll see how they come out or what their market value is.
Yeah.
But man, it also kind of points out the big problem with the Amonkhet ones, the invocations, is those obscured the art so much. And yeah. What a tragedy, because some of that art, Daze is still the start screen on my PC. Like, some of the art on that is beautiful, and it was just like there was so much garbage going on around that frame.
Yeah.
Not good graphic design there, guys. I'm sorry. What have you seen the Through the Breach with Imrakul?
Yeah.
Showing up in the...
That's nice. I really like that.
I really wish Grizzlebrand was writing on Imrakul or something.
Yeah.
Like, let's just really go all in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Heavy metal.
And then there's the dude talking to his wife on the phone in the background that you played against. I want them to really break down this fourth wall.
Yeah, through the breach.
All right, Cameron. So... real short news day, so we're going to come back, or short week, I should say. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more video games and some other stuff. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron, so show notes are getting a little weird. Can we just first, before anything else, we talked about it a lot on the pre-show. I just made a joke about it, how conflicted I feel about Red Dead. There's moments of just pure brilliance. The artists and designers that have made that world, and then in complete opposition of the people that designed the game and the missions, who apparently, A, just don't care about me or my time at all, and haven't decided to make new missions since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in a lot of ways, the structure of the game is, like, they're trying to tell a very direct narrative, and the technology is just so wowing, but like, I feel like I had more options as a character in the first Red Dead, which is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still only 3 or 4 hours in. Has that been, like, what's been going on with you in it? You said you wanted to be more
like
Skyrim.
Yeah, I had the same thoughts. I mean, like, I was telling you during the pre-show that, in a way, I want this to be more of an RPG. I don't want, I mean, I know, like, it's a narrative and it's about, like, this, I guess, the redemption of this character that you're following through the course of the game.
We hope so.
Which we haven't really seen yet, but whatever, that's fine. But I find it weird how, like, there's, like, this option of, like, you're rescuing somebody on the road. Like, this woman fell over and, like, the horse trapped her leg. And so you have to lift up the dead horse and bring her out, and then you, like, take her to a town, right? And you get, like, a little good action. And then, like, immediately following that, I, like, stumble onto a camp with, like, bad guys who are bad guys because they are bad guys. Like, there's no reason. And I just mow down 60 people. And, like, to me, it doesn't make sense in the context of, like, who I am as this character in this world. Like, I am clearly an awful, awful human being. And there's no redemption for that. And I just wish that that was a little bit more cognizant with how this game kind of coalesced around these systems in this world.
Yeah, like you break a dude out of jail and mow down like 60 cops,
yeah,
or sheriffs or whatever.
Yeah,
and then the next moment I'm helping a dude who got snake bitten, like literally.
Yeah,
bitten
yeah,
by
yeah,
a snake.
Sucked the venom out, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I had like the cure, so I didn't have to do any venom sucking. But like, and then there's these moments where you're hunting and it's completely sublime. It's like an amazing. Yeah. Hunting, like the hunting game that's in this is better than any hunting game that's ever been made. So like, yeah. It's just very confusing. Lots of emotions. Anyway, so you wanted to talk about sports, Cameron.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Explain
this to me.
There's this guy, I don't know if you're familiar with him. His name is LeBron James.
All right, Cameron. What basketball team does LeBron James play for? Do you know?
I know this because I follow Vanity Fair and Variety and all these other, like, you know, and just no. I know that he plays for the LA Lakers, right?
How long has he been playing for the Lakers?
At least a year.
This is his first year with the Lakers.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Do you know who he's with before? I want this whole career, Cameron. Yeah. Where was he before?
Miami, right?
Cleveland, buddy.
Cleveland. Okay.
All right. Go ahead. Yeah. LeBron James is in a movie.
LeBron James, he's doing a show. It's called The Shop, and it takes place at a barbershop, It is the most beautifully lit, beautifully like produced looking show. And it's LeBron and his business partner, who I cannot remember, but he was like a high school buddy of his and does like all the business ventures for LeBron. And they invite comedians. They invite other athletes like in a variety of different sports to come and just talk. And it's kind of like the barbershop sort of conversation that happens. And like people are getting their haircuts while they talk about everything from like the psychology of like how you play basketball to race to like just being at the top of your game, whether that's in comedy or whatever. So like Jon Stewart was on the first episode talking with LeBron about like just how like these parallels happen between like a comedian's career and a basketball player's career. It is incredible. Like, I cannot express to you how much I have enjoyed this show. There's only two episodes out right now. I'm hopeful that the third one will come out here shortly. But it's great. Like, it's just like a legitimately great conversation with athletes and whatnot, just talking about their views on the world. And it's really good. Like, I cannot express, like, you should watch it. Absolutely watch it.
Oh, I will, Cameron. No, I thought you were talking about the film where LeBron James is dressed up like an old guy and he plays basketball. But this is not, this is an actual show. So
this is an actual show. Like
I will definitely
HBO
be watching
Sports.
This.
Yeah.
Nice. No, HBO Sports does great stuff.
Yeah, really good stuff.
And no, this sounds interesting. I love that kind of behind the scenes stuff, because I often think as fans we think of the athletes as much more oppositional than they are when they're off the field or off the court, as the case may be, and just hearing their perspectives on their lives and stuff like that is would be super intriguing. It sounds like Comedians in Cars, but with branching out from comedy.
Yeah,
which I like comedy, but I don't love comedy, and watching an entire show where it is nothing but comedians kind of after a while just runs dry to me.
Sure.
So I think the multitude of perspectives there sounds really interesting. So I want to mention a couple things. Number one, Netflix show The Dragon Prince. Have you heard of it, Cameron?
I've heard of it. Don't know anything about it.
It's brilliant. It's incredibly brilliant. It's one of the writers of Avatar The Last Airbender. Okay. It's a Netflix exclusive show, and it is high fantasy, right? And I love it. It is a fantastic show to watch with your kids. Just to put this in perspective, I have a daughter that's 11 and a son that's 3 now. And so finding something that we can all watch together that I get something out of is real tough. Mm-hmm. And man, this is, it feels like a Brandon Sanderson novel. It feels like a really solid, hey, there's this prince, you know, something happens to his dad, so he has to go on a quest. There's elves. I mean, as soon as they sounds utter awesome. The expression moon shadow elves, I'm pretty much on board, you know? But, like, it's just a really rich, well-made world. It also, this is really interesting, has a character that is mute, that signs. And there's a character that translates for her. But then there's sequences where they don't translate for the character because the translator's gone or whatever. And what an amazing moment that is. How many times have you had someone on screen sign and it's not translated for you in any way, and you are still able to, through the writing, through the context, get something out of it? It was an incredibly powerful little sequence, and a real credit to the show. So, Dragon Prince, it's very on tone with like Korra or Avatar The Last Airbender, something that really scales well across multiple age groups. Last thing I want to mention, and I'm not all the way through it. Do you know what 30 for 30 is, Cameron?
No.
It is ESPN's documentary series.
Oh, yes. Then I do know that. Yes, yeah.
And so they do a TV version, and they also have a podcast. And I listened to, because I was on the road this weekend, this five-part series. Cameron, you have to listen to this. Put it on your queue for podcast. It's called Bikram. And okay. It is about Bikram yoga, which I did not know what that was. But it was the original version of hot room yoga in the United States. And it's the guy's name. And it is this story of how he slowly accumulates this yoga empire and basically turns it into, like, spoilers. But by the end of it, he's accused of sexual assault and flees the country. And it is like a great study on this, not only this guy's rise, but as somebody that's listening from a distance, you are so aware that so much of this guy is phony, that it's false, and that the things he's doing is creepy or over the top or inappropriate, but the people that are in it don't. And it is just this case study of kind of like this cult mentality and what it can do to people, and how no one sat and thought or said out loud, hey, what that guy's doing, that's not okay. And just people went with it over the decades. So if you're one of these people that, because look, I don't know anything about yoga, specifically hot yoga. I don't know anything about poses, etc. You know, I've just done the like workout video yogas every once in a while whenever I feel like I need to get do some stretching. Unbelievable. And it is on the level of This American Life, which I don't say lightly.
Wow.
You know, because I think they are the tippity top. Now, the problem with This American Life is you want to go home and just ugly cry into a pillow after you're done with every episode. But this is, I mean, I was like, it was Making a Murderer level of infuriating by the end of it.
Wow.
Like I was ready to like run through a wall. I was so upset.
Sounds great.
So you'll love it. You'll love it. Anyway, Cameron, that's just the 30 for 30 podcast. They also do a video set of documentaries, which are also great, but those don't always cross paths. So anyway, Cameron, if someone would like to get at you and talk to you about your newfound fondness for LeBron James.
Please, yes. That's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
I know he's one of your top five favorite forwards of all time.
yes.
And if someone would like to get at me, I'm @Curtis Now. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeadMTG. We will check you guys next week.